Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Fuel your day with Green Fern's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
You've been listening to Jenny Green for the last couple of hours. It's Monday the 15th of November and this is Game On. My voice is going after a busy weekend, which hasn't seen me stop talking. But anyway, we'll keep going. Coming up today, we're live. We will relive the greatness of Saturday evening at the Aviva.
The match referee, Luke Pearce, has blown the full-time whistle. The challenge was laid down. TJ Perenara with the hacker before the game. Ireland accepted the challenge. They rose to the challenge.
I'd say there'll be a lot of people with voices gone today after such a brilliant weekend of sport, and we will have more on that weekend soon. We'll also have Rory Best and Murray Kinsella on the Ireland win over the All Blacks. And in soccer, Stephen Kelly and Alan Cawley will look back on last night's win in Luxembourg.
Ireland have it back once again. Hendrick plays it in and Knight is in behind the cover. Works it back to Ogbeni! Chidozie Ogbeni is there to apply the finish, and it's a second international goal for Chidozie Ogbeni.
If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome along. We are going to start with racing. It has been an eventful few days in the world of racing. Last week, animal remedies that are banned for use in racehorses were seized following a raid on a farm in County Kildare. John Warwick, a well-known British equine therapist, was operating there, a British-based equine therapist. There were two trainers caught up in the raid. One was Ted Walsh and the other Liam Burke. Both deny any wrongdoing. Paul Kimmage and David Walsh both covered the story extensively yesterday in the Sunday papers and have been investigating whether or not there is a doping problem in racing for quite a while now. During the course of his investigations, Kimmage was given a dossier from a private investigator. It contained information on 56 horse boxes that had visited the clinic run by Warwick during the summer of this year. Included in that list were horse boxes associated with Jessica Harrington, Enda Bulger, Peter Fahey, Noel C. Kelly. They have all explained why they or their horse boxes were visiting Warwick. Ruby, they have all explained why they were there and or their horse boxes, and in isolation it's all very plausible, but when you put it all together it's hard not to be more than a little bit suspicious.
Yeah, definitely suspicious is a word you could use, or I suppose with me knowing all of those people, Marie, very inquisitive, and yeah, I can see each and every one of them having plausible answers and explaining their cases, but it does all add up to suspicion.
I think it probably adds to the suspicion as well when you have David Walsh and Paul Kimmage investigating what is happening in racing and whether or not there is a potential doping issue. Anyone that follows sport and sports media and is a sports fan will be well aware of the work that both David Walsh and Paul Kimmage have done over careers that have spanned 3 decades anyway. I'm not sure what age they are, but it looks like about 3 decades. And time again, we've been seeing them told, or we've heard that they were told that there is nothing to see here, that they are barking up the wrong tree, that they are wrong. But time and time again, they are proven right. Is this the time, Ruby, do you think that they're going to be proven wrong?
I wouldn't think so. I think, Marie, racing is no different, or horse racing is no different to every other sport in the world. There will be people who are trying to get an advantage and there will be people using things they shouldn't be using. So, I'm not naive enough to think that racing is squeaky clean. I think it's like every other sport in the world.
The top line in Paul Kimmage's piece was that there are a lot of questions now going to be raised and should be raised after what has happened over the weekend. And we saw in the last 4 or 5 days, really, we saw that the raid that got quite a lot of attention. It was led by the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. Officials were acting on their own investigations and information received. They were supported by the Gardaí as well as the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board. The head of anti-doping, Lynn Hillier, was there as well. These are serious people, Ruby, and it was a serious raise. It raises serious questions, as Kimmage says. For you, what is the most serious one?
I think it's good, Marie, that they're all working together and that they have tracked whatever it is from America, I do believe, and have worked together and followed it to Kildare and have found it. I think that's good, because in any sport you have to know what the product is if you're going to test for it and catch people for it. So I think that's a step forward, that those departments are all collaborating and working together.
So look, you're obviously a big name and a big face in racing, and it's good to hear that you are in favour of this, and you think that it's an important thing to do. Noel Mead, former chairman of the Irish Racehorse Trainers Association, he was quite critical of Jim Bulger over the weekend, and you know, a lot of people have been critical of Jim Bulger. In a way, I suppose you could say he's a bit of a whistleblower. He has pointed to the fact that there is and he thinks there is a problem within your industry. Do you think it's the case that people are a little bit annoyed with what Jim Bulger is doing, as Noel Mead has said, or are you happy, and are people happy that if there is anything untoward going on, that there are robust investigations taking place?
I think I would have liked Jim Bulger to have come out with the product. I mean, to say so-and-so, or no, he never named any name, but to say people are using something or are cheating, you can't accuse somebody if you don't know what they're at. And that's what anybody who's trying to catch drug cheats needs, is the name of the product, so they can test for it and catch the people that are using it. So if the Department of Food, Agriculture and the Marine, or the IHRB, have found substances in Monastirevan last week, they can now retrospectively test all the samples they have taken. They've taken numerous blood samples, hair samples from loads of horses all over the country, and I'm assuming they've stored them. So if they have products now, they can retrospectively test, and therefore they will find out who is or who isn't. Proof will be in the eating. But I never mind what Jim Bulger said. It's just that I would have liked the name of something. Tell them, people that are in charge, what it is you know, and allow them to catch the people that are cheating. Nobody wants to be playing or participating or watching an unlevel playing field. So if you know it, say it.
Warwick told the Racing Post that there is nothing that would fail a dope test, but he certainly contravened the rules. So the fact that he's saying that there's nothing there that would fail a dope test, even if they do test all those samples and Warwick is correct that there was nothing would fail a dope test, he's still saying that he contravened the rules, which is pretty worrying as well.
Yeah, it is, but that gets technical now, Marie, way above my pay grade. But to my understanding, he's not licensed, and therefore every racehorse, its history has to be documented in his passport, everything it's given. But if he's not licensed, he can't do that. So it could be as simple as that. I don't know. There are different products that maybe, I don't know. And again, I don't understand that. That's too technical for me. But he's not a licensed person, so therefore, I don't know, even if he has the products, are they, if he's carrying them, how are they licensed?
There's a perception as well, Ruby, that this is all coming from Britain, that they have a very serious suspicion over there about what's happening here. Like, what do you think of that as someone who would have connections to both?
I think that's a bit fanciful, but the man in question is English. He's hardly just working here. So, I mean, he works on both sides of the sea, so is he doing one thing here and something else over there? I don't think so. I don't really believe that one. I'm more inclined to believe that whatever he was getting was followed in through customs, and the Department of Food, Agriculture and the Marine followed it to see where it was going.
It does seem, just from what Paul Kimmich has done as well, that there is somebody who has a lot of information and has an interest in trying to find out what's happening here, that if they are going to be engaging in private investigators, that there's a reason for that as well.
Yeah, but I would prefer if that was the IHRB. I mean, they are the regulator. They have, I don't expect their veterinary team to be doing that, but they do have a security team. And if somebody can go on off their own bat and hire a private investigator and be on top of all of this, I'd kind of like to know why the IHRB aren't as well. That would be the question I'd have there now. That would be a bit of a red flag for me as to what exactly they're doing.
David Walsh in his piece said that he believed the FBI had tipped off the Irish authorities about the consignment of products en route to Dublin. And like, even when you hear about the FBI having to do that, Ruby, in terms of what it signifies about the racing industry, and here I know I said a little bit earlier that it feels worrying, and that does feel worrying as well.
Yeah, but that to me adds up to his more plausible Marie as to how someone knew it was there rather than a group of English people suspecting it was coming. I mean, that's to do with customs and exports and imports coming here. And I'd say if you're looking, you're in wherever in America and it's been exported from, to ask the question why, and it's gone to an unlicensed person, it's not too hard to put two and two together there.
What about the reputational damage? Like, your father Ted is caught up in this, whether he likes it or not, that's the situation that he's in, Ruby. And like, this is a story that has been read by people who are not as familiar and intertwined with racing as you know, the people that you would probably be associated with. And it's probably a story as well that's gone quite global. From a reputational point of view, how damaging is it?
And of course it's damaging reputational wise for racing and for everybody that has been named in the piece. But now, look, Dad was there. He's explained exactly why he was there for laser treatment on a horse's tendon. But to me, it's like anything. There was a scene of a crime. To me, he was an eyewitness. Some people will think he was complicit and you'll never change their opinion. But unfortunately, that's what happens when you are there. But I do believe he was an eyewitness.
Do you feel that in time that will come out, Ruby, that he will look, I guess.
I do, because the goal, his horse was tested, so were the horses, two horses Liam Burke had, one of them wasn't even his. They will be tested, and I don't believe any of them will prove positive for anything that was in Mr. Warwick's car.
Okay, well, time will give us a clear indicator on that. And just one last thing, Ruby, we've obviously been on the show together now for quite a while, and we've had a few conversations about racing that have been probably a little bit uncomfortable and ones that are shining a bit of a negative light on your sport. And for someone who's got a bit of a passing interest, it does feel like there's a bit of a murkiness now associated with racing. Like, how do you feel about that?
Well, sure, look, of course you feel disappointed about it. I think you love putting me on the spot and making me sweat. But
true.
Yeah. No, look, it's not great. I'd love to be much preferred to be here talking to you about Sharjah and Nube Negra and West Cork all winning at the weekend. But unfortunately, bad news carries far more weight than good news. And that's just the way the world is.
OK, well, on that note now, I am going to head
Give
for
me a
break.
Breather.
Yes.
With Green Fern. Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on. Rugby.
Sexton has it. Moves it up. As they go charging through the line. Pops it across. James Lowe for the try. James Lowe for the corner. James Lowe, born in New Zealand. Reared in Dublin. Cultivated at the Aviva Stadium. Into the lead, 14 minutes gone, 5 points to them. Ireland screaming for a fast ball as New Zealand try to put the squeeze on. Time for the try. Ireland moved the point of attack swiftly in the 30th minute. A tie furlong has smashed between the North and the South Island of New Zealand. Ireland in for the second try. Murray got us the ball. It's gone back to James Lowe. Referee Luke Pearce has blown the full-time whistle. The challenge was laid down. TJ Paranora with the haka before the game. Ireland accepted the challenge. They rose to the challenge. And Ireland have beaten the living daylights out of New Zealand for the third time. We were in Chicago. We were in the Aviva Stadium. And they've done it again this afternoon. 3 penalties late in the match by Joey Carberry. Ireland have absolutely smashed New Zealand by 29 points to 20.
You guys, I'm so damn proud of you, really and truly. Don't pretend you don't know me when I show up, all right? Yes! By the way, I can work that out.
Between Joe Biden, but I think Michael Corcoran definitely done his best impression of Micheál and Murray Hurtig there when he was describing James Lowe scoring his first try, replacing it with New Zealand rather than Fiji when it was Sean Elgar-Halpin. We're delighted to be joined on the line by Murray Kinsella and Rory Best. Rory, I'm going to start with you. You've been involved in that kind of a situation in the past. This was a slightly different performance, but I think equally as thrilling.
Yeah, like, I think the performance on Saturday afternoon was probably as good of Ireland performance I've seen in a long time. I thought just they dominated everywhere, and a lot's been made about how this green wall just went after New Zealand. And yes, everyone's saying New Zealand didn't play well, but they just weren't allowed to. They were just smothered. I think probably what the most impressive is, normally when you get Ireland in this sort of mood, it is about a lot about grunt, and it's a lot about smothering teams and then taking a chance every now and again. But every time the back line got the ball, they really looked like they cut through New Zealand, which is no mean feat.
It was incredible to watch, Rory, how New Zealand were the ones that ended up out on their feet, not Ireland. You're used to seeing the Irish lads peeling themselves off the ground, heaving in lungfuls of air. But that was the All Blacks this time round.
Yeah, it just shows that if you can dominate possession and dominate territory and make teams make tackles, there was a stat sort of most of the way through the first half that Ireland were just dominating all aspects. I think New Zealand had maybe made three times more tackles than Ireland had. And no matter who you are, and no matter if you want to portray yourself as being invincible like the All Blacks, if you have to make three and four times more tackles than the opposition and are constantly under pressure, look, fatigue sets in and mistakes happen, and that's what Ireland did. And it's very strange to see, because that's normally what New Zealand do to everyone else. So it was brilliant to see this Ireland team doing that.
Murray Kinsella is also with us. Murray, should we be getting excited? We do have a couple of texts in which are probably summing up the mood of some of the people in this country, saying that New Zealand were flying here, there and everywhere, that they were tired, they'd been out during the week, it was the end of a long year for them, and that next summer's three tests will show how good we really are. Where do you sit on it?
Yeah, I mean, all that is true, but it doesn't diminish from the quality of the Irish performance. As Rory says there, a lot of their struggles were based on what Ireland did in attack. It was 231 tackles they had to make in the end, which is a massive number. And was the reason that they made mistakes in defence for a couple of those tries, uncharacteristic mistakes, because Ireland was so relentless. What was really impressive was just the fluidity of Ireland's performance. The attacking side of the game was, again, like the Japan fixture a week ago, just really high class. And you're seeing it now. All the forwards in this Ireland team, they can handle the ball. All of them can make decisions. And it's not just about Johnny Sexton in attack in terms of the back line. You know, Gary Ringrose stood up as a playmaker. You had Hugo Keenan as a first receiver, James Lowe getting a huge number of touches in attack, and Andrew Conway featuring. Everyone in that back line now is stepping up and taking responsibility. And suddenly you've got a situation where Ireland are really hard to predict in attack. You know, Andy Farrell set out to make them unpredictable, and that's exactly what they've got now. The All Blacks, they just genuinely struggled to deal with the variety and the options that Ireland were taking. So that's really exciting. Yes, it's going to be very different down there next summer, a three-test tour, when they're probably physically in their peak. But this is a really exciting development for Ireland, and absolutely you cannot take away from the quality of the victory.
Rory, we're hearing some voices in the background there. We know that you're away coaching with Fiji for the November test. Are they the Fijian players we're hearing in the background?
Yeah, some of them. They're very hard to keep quiet at times.
Any of them take inspiration from the Irish at the weekend?
It was amazing that they were all coming up and congratulating. I think that they understood how special performance it is. I think no matter what team you're involved in, if you're involved in the sport and you see a performance like that, you can't help but be enthralled with it. And I think the Fijian boys on yesterday afternoon were incredible. We went down quite early with a red card. We had two yellow cards, so we're down to 13 men for 20 minutes of the game. But they dug in, and I think we looked back at the game this morning and realised that we actually left so much more out there and had Wales exactly where we wanted them, and just didn't quite have the killer instinct at times and let them back in with a few mistakes. But they were a really impressive bunch to coach, to be around. It's very different from any environment I've been in, i.e. Ulster, Ireland, Lions, because you're dealing with It's a lot about culture, it's a lot about the people, and it's about learning in different ways, and it's been a real eye-opener, but really enjoyable.
You must be watching everything now, Rory, with that coach's hat on, and just in terms of what you've been learning, you know, you're saying it's probably different to the way that Ireland and Ulster would have been, but what are the big challenges that you're seeing?
I think it's about coaching in a different way. I think with Ireland, and certainly with Northern Hemisphere, UK and Ireland teams, you know, you can drill, you can do loads of walkthroughs, you can have 30-minute meetings where you can show a dozen clips and people take it in. Whereas here, because of the way they're brought up, the way they're brought up on the island, you know, just it's not the same. You can't just keep showing them stuff and take it in. You got to be very visual with them. You got to take them through walkthroughs. But ultimately, they want to go out on the training pitch and learn. They make a mistake and they learn from that very quickly. And that's just the way they are. They need to experience it. But their appetite to get better is probably what has impressed me the most.
And Murray, just listen to what Rory is saying there about walkthroughs, etc. A lot of what Ireland did on Saturday seemed to be pretty off the cuff. They seemed to play with great flair, spread the ball side to side, attack, set the tempo, control the pace. It was magic to watch. Is it Andy Farrell or is there more people influencing this? Because it's a brand of rugby we haven't seen Ireland play for a long time.
Yeah, well, Andy Farrell's belief is that rugby is a decision-making sport. He wants every single player on the pitch to be able to make decisions. And he said it afterwards. He said, you know, traditionally, Ireland and teams in this part of the world were renowned for rolling up their sleeves and getting stuck in. But he believes that Irish players have the skill level and the vision, I suppose, to make those decisions. So, listen, there's bits of structure there. They have an attack shape where the forwards will align themselves across the pitch so they always have people in certain slots. But within that, there's a lot of freedom now for the players to be, I suppose, autonomous and to make those decisions. And that's the really exciting part of it because, you know, within one little bit of shape, you might have three different options. And it's so hard for defenders to predict what's coming. And that, in turn, will affect their decision-making, their line speed in defence. And suddenly, you've got loads of different options. So, yeah, it's a really exciting place for them to be in. We should also say that the defensive side of the game, albeit they only had to make, 100 tackles in comparison to the All Blacks, 231. But there were some massive moments in defence there. Even in the 10th minute, Andrew Conway and Gary Ringrose somehow stopped Jordy Barrett from scoring. Obviously, later on in the game, Jamison Gibson-Park prevents Sever Reese from scoring down the left-hand side. And, of course, James Lowe gets his big moment in defence in the 72nd minute where he helps Peter O'Mahony to get that opportunity to turn the ball over and Joey Carberry can kick a 50-metre penalty. So you've got to be able to cling in there and fight against the All Blacks, and Ireland did that as well as attacking brilliantly.
Where there's a huge amount of excitement as well about the front row of Porter, Kelleher and Furlong, and to have them fit and functional, but also to be able to be celebrating the fact that they have agility and their ball handling skills are so good as well. What's impressed you most about them?
Yeah, they're very modern props, I suppose, in terms of they've got that complete skill set. I mean, Andrew Porter literally just switched across the loose head again at the start of this season, having played his professional rugby at Tighthead. And already he's looking like one of the best in the business. He went 76 minutes in this game and was like sprinting across the pitch right until the end. A massive work rate from him. It's that mobility and that skill level that they have. Tadhg Furlong's almost like a playmaker in this Ireland team, and Ronan Kelleher as well. They're big athletic guys, and it's really important to be able to win contact and get across the gain line if your attack is going to flourish. So they do that really well. They've got a set piece quality as well. And Ronan Keller will continue to learn about those pressure moments that I suppose Rory knows all about with the line-out throwing, but that's across the pack really now. It's a young pack with, I think, more potential to come, and all of them are athletic and skillful players, so it's a great place to be.
Rory, the elder statesman of the team is the captain, Johnny Sexton, and he was targeted and took a fair bit of punishment. How much longer can you see Johnny taking the grueling, the bashings that he's getting?
I think that if you go right back throughout Johnny's career, the way he plays, he's always going to take a bashing, and that's because he plays flat the line. He engages people. People understand how important he is to Ireland, and any good out half, any world class out half is. So, you know, teams will target him. There's a couple of late hits on him early on, and I think the attitude that he shows to that's a little bit of niggle that he gives back. Suggest to me that he's nowhere near ready to hang up the boots. And I think for Johnny, he'll play for as long as he wants. I think Johnny will have an idea when he wants to leave the game, and he'll want to leave on top. And as far as I know, he wants to get to the next World Cup and he wants to play there. And with performances like that on Saturday, I certainly wouldn't be betting against him. I think with the way Ireland are playing, you know, with this sort of want to go out and play with no fear, you know, it's Johnny's character, and you can see that coming through with the captaincy and the freedom that the team are giving. So look, I think that Ireland, of course, they need to, with the injuries got now, it allows them to experiment again on Saturday. They got to keep or somebody, they got to keep building the depth below them. But like when you have one of the best out halves in the world that can show performance like that on Saturday, you keep him going as long as you can.
The injury he suffered is a twisted knee and ankle, and Jack Carty has been called in his place. He's going to be out for about 6 weeks. He is going to miss that game against Argentina, and hopefully he will recover pretty sharp from that. Murray, it was really interesting as well to hear both Andy Farrell and a couple of players talking about the mental aspect of the game as well, and the work that Gary Keegan is doing with them.
Yeah, this is a massive part of the win. If you think about the frustration Ireland had in the first half where they piled the pressure on and they somehow go in 10-5 down. And Johnny Sexton said, you know, maybe in the past that would have allowed, you know, the frustration would have seeped into our performance and maybe the heads would have gone down a small bit. But he was really proud of the way the team just came out and got the job done in those 11 minutes after halftime where they scored two tries. They've been working with Gary Keegan since last year. I think the RFU had, you know, the review into the 2019 World Cup had kind of cited that performance anxiety maybe was something they mentioned, and they've tried to resolve that, I suppose. Andy Farrell obviously has his own strengths in this area in terms of his mental ability and motivating people. But yeah, we know Gary Keegan's been a great success in boxing and indeed in across loads of sports. He's a great guy to have in the environment, just working with them to be calm in the moment. And that's another aspect of their attacking play that we can see now. There's calmness on the ball and people are getting their heads up and making good decisions. From what we hear as well, he's kind of helping players individually just have really good habits around their preparation for games as well. So all that stuff that happens behind the scenes, away from the limelight, is really important. And that's kind of the story of this team, you know. It feels like kind of suddenly they've clicked into gear, but really a lot of this has been worked on for a long time, including that attack. And we didn't always see it. And sometimes it looked stuttering and maybe even poor at times, but now that it has clicked into gear, it's really impressive, and Ireland are reaping the rewards.
All that stuff is hugely important, Rory, but you know as well as I do that a moment of good fortune can change how you see everything. And for me, watching Joey Carberry at the weekend, lots of injuries, going only okay for Munster, on he comes, and that penalty from the halfway line just falling over the bar that basically put Ireland on the front foot. Like, what does that do for him?
Okay, he's a talented boy, and you know, he went to the World Cup in 2019, like really on one leg. He wasn't quite right, but you know, as any player would do with the World Cup on the horizon, you just try to get through it. He then came back from that and hasn't played a lot of rugby since, and he has had a couple of bad sort of turns of luck since then, and it's great to see him back on the big stage, and he was really developing really nicely in that sort of 2018-19, and it's good to see him back there. I think Ireland need Joey Carberry fit, playing well. Munster need him, and he'll just, the more he can play, like any out half, it's about confidence, and the more he can play, the more confidence he can get, the more he'll be able to run the game and close out games and know when to play the right play, because like ultimately that is probably the one thing that Johnny has over everyone else. And yeah, completely agree with Murray, who said there's a lot of people are stepping up at first receiver, but ultimately a lot of that attack and the attack shape is still Johnny Sexton will be running it in training, and he'll be helping the people at first receiver. So you need the likes of Joey to be playing, to be comfortable in these surroundings, and to be able to run that attack the way Johnny can.
Jameson Gibson-Park, Murray, did have a really good game as well. He has his grip firmly now on that jersey, I'd imagine.
Yeah, it looks like he does. He's a very creative player, and again, when you're looking to have a bit of variety to your attack, that's really important. There have been a few examples of him, you know, making strong decisions in attack that have led to opportunity for Ireland with his passing game, with his ability to snipe and scoot around the rucks. He's got a lovely pass, obviously, as well. And his kicking game has really improved. Like, those parts of the at test level are really important as well, and he's given the likes of Andrew Conway a chance to go and win that ball back. Defensively, as I mentioned, he had a couple of massive moments, that one with Severis, and he had another one where he covers that little chip the All Blacks had in behind the defence late on in the game. He reads the play very well, a very smart rugby player, and in credit to him, he really has improved with every single opportunity. And again, it's the faith being rewarded from Andy Farrell and co. You know, he hasn't even been first choice in Leinster a lot of the time, because Luke McGrath is such a key guy there, but they saw this ability in him, this creativity, and they've backed it, and they're getting a great payoff for it now. So he continues to go from strength to strength, and what a special day for himself and James Lowe, really, playing against their native country for the first time. you know, James Lowe spoke about how strange it was afterwards, but absolutely special for them on what was, we should say, an unbelievable occasion in the stadium as well. Like, listening to Michael Corcoran there gave me a few goosebumps just remembering it all again, but it was special with a full house, and those guys thrived in that atmosphere.
Rory, obviously Jemison Gibson Park was great, but it is some luxury for Andy Farrell to be able to bring on Tadhg Byrne after 48 minutes, Peter O'Mahony after 58, and then throw in Conor Murray and Keith Dowles to close the game out. Like, it's some bench to have, and we haven't always had a bench as strong as that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you look at Cian Healy on there as well. You know, there are some really, really strong. Normally when you're playing the All Blacks, you look and you kind of look at the two benches and you sort of go, Ireland's isn't too bad, but New Zealand's is brilliant. Whereas this is the first time you looked at it and you went. And I think the big thing is, you have guys that come on and close the game out this time, but if you had to need to change the way you maybe needed to go after New Zealand, there was people on there that could have changed the game as well as closing it out. And that's the exciting thing, is that, yes, you want the game to go perfectly for you and you want Ireland to play like that every single time they pull on a green jersey. Unfortunately, the reality of playing a sport like that with 15 individuals coming together as a team against another 15, you don't always get it exactly how you want it. So you need to be able to make changes, and you need to be able to change the direction of the game with your bench. And that's why it's so important. And those guys come on and did really well closing the game out. Like I say, if you're looking to loosen the game up a little bit and you can bring on a Tadhg Byrne, you know, I think of the scrums struggling a little bit and you can bring on Cian Healy. You know, that's what you need to do. You mentioned Conor Murray, you know, like somebody that hasn't played a lot of rugby and still came on and was able to close the game out as well. So look, I think it's really exciting for Ireland.
Rory, we've a text in for you. Do you think that this was a better result for New Zealand because now the All Blacks have a few years to the World Cup to know what they need to work on, while Ireland couldn't really play any better?
That's a good point, and we know what the All Blacks are like when they've lost. And Ian Foster was speaking afterwards. He said, we're not even thinking about summer, but you know they'll be really looking forward to getting Ireland down in New Zealand, where of course Ireland have never won, and that's next challenge for this team. Absolutely, they're going to have to go to another level. But that's the exciting thing as well, and Farrell and Sexton both spoke about this after. They feel there's plenty more scope in this team. Even think about those opportunities in the first half. Like, Ireland went into New Zealand 16 times in this game, and 12 of those times they didn't even score. You know, they came away empty-handed. So there's loads of examples of getting into good positions and not maybe taking the opportunities. Of course, you're not going to get every single one of them, but there's more scope and potential in this team. There's growth areas like the kicking game that can get better in terms of attacking kicking. And that's exciting. As I mentioned, some of the younger guys are really stepping up as leaders now with a young age profile. Think of Hugo Keenan, of Caelan Darris, Ronan Keller, Andrew Porter. All these guys who are in their mid or early 20s who can definitely get better over the coming years. So absolutely, the All Blacks will learn a huge amount from this. They always do, but I think there's growth left in this Ireland team, and that's really exciting.
Rory, would you agree with that? The age profile is young enough for there to be a couple of years in this Irish team. I mean, James Ryan, Caelan Darris, Jack Conan, they're not exactly old.
No, I totally agree with everything Murray said there, and I think it's something I've seen a few bits and pieces talking about, oh, Ireland have done it again, you know, they've peaked in the middle of World Cups. But for me, that's a nonsense. You see, when you're playing international rugby, you want to play, you want to win. So you look at the confidence. If Ireland had made a few changes with one eye on the World Cup and lost New Zealand, you know, then you go into Argentina under pressure. Whereas no matter what team plays next Sunday, they're going to ride this wave that this team produced on Saturday, and that allows you to experiment a little bit, but only a little bit, because it's international rugby. You need to win, and when you win, then when you drop a young guy in to a reasonably settled team, then they can flourish, they can show the best themselves. And look, I think it is really exciting for Ireland. I think Johnny's right, and you know that with Johnny's personality, with Andy Farrell's personality, they're going to enjoy that, but they're also going to go right back to work on probably Tuesday this week. There's Sunday game, it'll be right, but how do we get better? How do we make sure that we keep that consistency and we show that game in, game out, that we can be one of the best teams about?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what does come down the track for this Ireland team after such an impressive performance at the weekend. And Rory, to you as well, best of luck in your next game. Is it you're in Spain?
where in Madrid at the minute we're playing Georgia on Saturday.
Very good. Well, best of luck with that. Murray, just stay with us for 1 minute because I want to ask you about the Ireland women's team. It was a really tough week for them, but they fronted up with a win against the USA on Friday night in the RDS. I was there myself. I saw afterwards the scenes, the emotion, and it did feel like it was more than just about beating the USA.
Absolutely. I mean, Ciara Griffin, the captain, said it afterwards. Actions speak louder than words, and they did that. She said she was the proudest person in Ireland that the group had been through that, you know, controversy off the pitch and managed to channel it into a positive performance, which it was. It started rockily enough. There was lots of errors. But as tends to be the case, Bavin Parsons comes up with a wonder try and just changes the course of the game. She is a superstar, 19-year-old. If we're talking about young Irish rugby players, she's top of the list in terms of quality. Her athleticism is incredible, and she scored a brilliant try. But across the board, really, you could see the emotion and passion in the Irish performance. They fronted up really strongly. Lindsay Peat, obviously, who's near the end of her international career, going over for a score and leading the way in many regards. Cliona Maloney, who, you know, featured prominently in all the off-the-pitch stuff and the headlines and the stories. She was combative and aggressive and abrasive. So, yeah, really pleasing for them to, I suppose, bounce back from that and get a win. And now they go and play Japan and look for a really positive finish to this month. It's just a strange old time, and listen, there's loads of stuff to happen and there's loads of improvements that need to be made, but they get another chance on the pitch to maybe sign off a couple of those careers in style.
Murray Kinsella, thanks a million for taking our call. We'll be back after the break with Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly to talk on the
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm's on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected Tesco's nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. I'm sure it's as obvious to the rest of you as it is to me, that Marie is sick of listening to me. She cut me off there on the way to the break, but don't worry, Marie, you're stuck with me for another 20 minutes or 15
still mute you
even.
Though. I have options.
Alan Kelly or Stephen. I'm just having a night.
Alan Cawley and Stephen Kelly.
Right, I'll eventually get it. Alan, after a campaign that couldn't have started much worse for Stephen Kenny, it certainly ended on a high.
It did, Ruby, yeah. And I think it was important for him to finish that way. Obviously, we all know about the start and, of course, the contributing factors to that in terms of the COVID and the injuries, and we've been all over that. But it was a very difficult start for him, and he was probably under a little bit of pressure, Stephen, considering he lost the first three games of the group. But I always felt, as I said to you many times, I was never getting too down around that. I was always looking, as I say, at the contributing factors as to why these things were happening or why the results maybe weren't going his way. And I always felt the campaign was going to play out a little bit like this. It was always kind of a building period for him and the introduction of all the new players. So the fact that obviously the longer he spent with the players and as the campaign had gone on, obviously we've seen that he's gotten a lot stronger, and you look at the last four games, there's been marked improvement in the team. I think that's largely down to the fact that there's been continuity in the team selection as well. You look at the last four or five games, they've probably played 7 or 8 out of the 11 every time and made the odd one or two changes, whereas you think of that early part of the campaign, the amount of changes he was having to make and even lads pulling out more than the games and all. So it's been really good. It's finished very strong, and I think there's lots to build on. I think there's 16 new caps he's introduced into the squad as well. And you look at the emergence of obviously young Bazunu and goals, absolutely fantastic. And that save last night. But even the likes of a Jamie McGrath, or particularly Ogbenna last night as well, these lads probably never would have got an opportunity only for the fact that Stephen obviously did speak about the radical overhaul that was needed. And we've seen that. And I think there's plenty to be optimistic about, Ruby.
Yeah, I agree with you, definitely, Alan. There is so much to be optimistic about. It's the last couple of games especially have been so enjoyable. I know we debated why there were so many people at the Aviva Stadium, whether it was to see Ireland or to see Ronaldo. I think a lot of it was to see Ireland, and they put on a really good performance, and then they followed it up as well with that performance tonight, which was so important. You mentioned some of the standout players and the new caps and everything coming through, but Stephen Kelly, Jason Knight last night was somebody that deserves a lot of credit. He came on only 20 years of age and had an unbelievable impact, having a hand in all three of the goals.
Oh, you talk about an introduction. Like, it was a big decision to take off your centre forward and put on a midfield, and you're changing your shape because you're bringing on like a midfield player that's, he's all action, he's everywhere, he can contribute defensively because he's not afraid to put a tackle in. But then his off the ball running and running in behind the lines was amazing. But then when he got into those areas, the calmness and collectedness, the first touch from the cross from McLean when he just sets it back to Robinson, and then the back heel to Pogba in, he was excellent. And you know, to see a player come on and change the game the way he did from that position was wonderful to see. That's another player thrown into the fold that we have, that we're looking forward to, that we can build on. That, you know, that's four or five really young players that are between the age of 19 and 21 that are coming to the forefront, and hopefully their club career can progress in the same speed and the international career will kick on as well. But you know, it was so impressive last night.
Alan, there was a time when we couldn't get a goal, yet we ended up the campaign with 11. Obviously, Callum Robinson, Chidozie Ogbene, we found a way to score a goal again. How do we manage that?
Yeah, and I think that was important as well, Ruby, because there was a major criticism thrown at Stephen, because I suppose maybe some of that was brought on by Stephen with the way he was speaking at the start in terms of the way we were going to play and create chances and own the ball and different things like that. And obviously when it wasn't happening, people were quick to jump on the back of that. But I don't think Stephen ever veered away from what he believes in, the philosophy that he has, the implementation of what he was trying to do. I don't think he's ever veered away from that. And I just go back to the fact that once we got our better players on the pitch, you mentioned the likes of Robinson, we missed Robinson for, was it twice he had COVID in a couple of the games and he missed out on. So he did really well. But then, as you say, the lads coming in, I feel a little bit sorry for Adam Ida, because he's done quite well in the games. I know he wasn't great last night, but he's done quite well and he's learning on the job, literally, because he's not getting any game time at club level, so he's having to learn on the job. And it was just unfortunate that he didn't get off the mark. But certainly Ogbeno over the last couple of games has been outstanding as well. And there's so much to, as I say, to be optimistic about, Ruby. It's by no means perfect, but we never felt it was going to be. But certainly in terms of what Stephen has done in the last 18 months and building for the future, I'm not sure how people can see the improvement in the team. Like, I know the arguments that have broken out after every match, and it literally seemed like every match there was a debate around Stephen. But I think that should be put to bed now. And I think Stephen deserves a lot of respect as well. Some of the comments and people who were debating this after games, literally after every game, I think they need to be quieting down a little bit now and show Stephen the respect that he deserves, because questioning his credibility after every match, I don't think is any good for anybody. And what we heard in the early part of the campaign when people were saying, well, it's a results business, now he's getting results and all we're hearing is, oh, it's Luxembourg and Azerbaijan, so he can't win. So I think you have to kind of just let him get on with the job. Marie mentioned the fact that the Aviva Stadium the other night, I was at the match, and you ask anybody who left that ground, and I've been at games under Mick McCarthy and Martin O'Neill over the last regime, and it was absolutely horrendous football that we were watching and leaving the ground, and people giving out left, right and centre. Nobody was giving out after the game the other night, everybody, and the amount of young kids and all, they're building a connection with the fans as well. You can see that with the young boys, and the fact that there's so many young Irish boys in the team as well, how could you not want to get behind that and support it?
Stephen, what needs to happen next then? The Nations League will probably, once we get over Christmas, come around pretty quickly. Do you think that the FAI need to clear up his contract before that, or should they wait until next summer as some people are suggesting?
I don't think they need to, because I think he's pretty secure in his job now. I think he's not going anywhere. I think it's his. I think it's just a formality, and I don't think he's going to be worried about it at this point. I'm sure they've probably said to him they might not want to actually do it because to appease people, but I just can't see them going any other direction now. Why would they? You know, the idea of Stephen coming in was because there's a big radical change in Irish football and it's about the style. And I think the question marks at the start were, you know, we should be beating Luxembourg and Azerbaijan to give ourselves a chance. Now we've beat them at the end of this campaign. If you then go into the next campaign feeling that we're capable of beating those teams lower than us, then we'd be, for instance, if we beat Luxembourg and Azerbaijan, we'd be 6 points closer. So we'd be 1 or 2 points off the top of Serbia and off Portugal. So you'd be in a much better position. So I'd be confident going into the next group of games that we're ever going to have that we'd be capable of beating those teams lower than us. So there's no reason for them to even contemplate changing Stephen Kenny. And to be honest, at this stage, who else would you go get? What would you do? And all these players have bought into it, and they're all so vocal about how they like playing under him. It would be madness to try and bring someone else in this situation, unless there's a complete catastrophe between now and the end of his contract. I just can't see it happening.
This is a name that's stuck in my head since the start of this conversation, but it's only 12 months since Damien Duff and Alan Kelly parted the backroom staff. Do you think Alan Cawley, that Stephen Kenny has benefited from a new backroom staff, and they're growing together with this team.
Yeah, I think there's a fair argument for that as well, Ruby. You look at the, I suppose, once Anthony Barry came in, the team changed in terms of the back three. And Stephen, I've been following Stephen all his career, and at Dundalk he never played a back three. It was always 4-3-3, and he always stuck to that all over the years at Dundalk. Since Anthony Barry has come in, obviously he's gone to the back three, which Anthony Barry knows so well at Chelsea. And I think it suits the personnel that we have as well, because you're getting Coleman and Doherty into the team, and we're very fortunate there in the fact that we do have some very good centre halves. The fact that you're playing the three allows you to have one extra player there and get them into the team, and they're their experience as well, players also. So I think that has helped. Also, I think Dean Kiley deserves a mention as well, and Stephen was quick to remark on that last night, even in the press conference afterwards. I think he's had a big impact. And you look at them all, and I know a staff member that's there who's heavily involved, and he speaks in glowing terms really of the rapport amongst the players and the staff. I think we could see that last night as well, Ruben. I think that all impacts on the group itself. I think it's important that the staff are all singing off the same hymn sheet, and obviously the players as well, and I think we're seeing that in the performances of what we're seeing on the pitch.
Stephen, you've obviously been in the Ireland setup, and you've been in with many teams as a player, and you're starting your coaching journey now. You mentioned the players there coming out speaking on behalf of Stephen Kenny. Does that have to be genuine? Like, is there any way that isn't the way it is? Like that you couldn't fake that?
No, I don't think the players, you could fake it. You could come out and say, I love the manager, because he's playing you every week and you completely disagree with his tactics. But if he's playing you, you're still going to like him. And I think there's been times in the past, so these players before would have said they've liked the manager and the Martin O'Neill and stuff and all. But it seems different now. And I think the way they're talking about it, like the one that jumps out at me is James McLean. He's not a guaranteed starter in the side, and he would have been under other regimes. And it's usually a player that's guaranteed to start, that plays week in, week out, that will love the manager, regardless of what tactics they play. If a manager plays you, you tend to like them. That tends to be the way it goes. But there's players that are talking about this manager that aren't guaranteed starters, and they're talking about how enjoyable the camp is, how much they're learning, and how that the everybody's on the same page and the system and the style. And that's kind of where you feel it's a little bit more genuine than what would be just the normal players that are starting every week singing the praise of the manager just to keep themselves in the team. It seems a bit different than, from my experience, that's what I'd be watching, looking out for.
It really does, and it is nice to finish off the year on a high. Stephen Kelly, thank you so much for joining us. Alan Colley, we do have time to talk about the Women's Electricity National League. There was so much drama at the weekend. So the way it was set to play out, both Shelburne and Piemont were in with the chance of winning the league, and Shelburne were the ones that did it. So Piemont needed to win against Galway, and they couldn't pull it off, while Shelburne went and beat Wexford Youths, and it came down to those last few minutes. It was just a brilliant night for women's football.
It was absolutely brilliant, Marie, and I suppose coming off the back of the good international win as well, obviously for Vera in the last round, and obviously we speak about the progression in women's sport, particularly the football here in the National League, but to have an ending like we had was absolutely unbelievable. Piemont, I'm not sure what went on, Marie, because to be 2-0 up and cruising, and it looked like they were cruising, but to be fair to Galway, obviously people could throw at them that obviously it was a dead rubber and you didn't have to be giving your all, but you look at the reaction from them when they went 2-0 down and carried on. And Shelburne were looking after their own business across the city, obviously in Tálchan Park as well. Noel King as well, who's been heavily involved in Irish football for a long time, and for Noel to win a league as well, it's absolutely brilliant for him. But an unbelievable night, and for it the way it played out, I'd say the girls are kicking themselves at the moment, Piemont United, because to be 2-0 up, and especially with them as well, Marie, when you think of the success they've had over the years,
and the experience they have on their side to lose 5-2.
The flag bearers for Irish football, really, and the experience in that group, they unravelled really. Like when they conceded that first goal, you could just see their heads drop, and obviously they were fearing the worst, but they shipped 3 or 4 goals in the space of about 10-15 minutes towards the end, so they'd be bitterly disappointed. But I think from Shell's point of view, and obviously the Shelburne First Division team won the league, Damien Duff going in as the manager as well, there's lots of good stuff going on at Shelburne, so it was a brilliant night for them.
And Joey O'Brien was confirmed today as well that he's going with them, he won't be with Shamrock Rovers, and that Shelburne women's team will be going for the double on Sunday. They play against Wexford in the FAI Cup final. And before we finish up, Alan Colley's call happening Wednesday night. Have you invited myself and Ruby?
Yeah, door. You better be there, Marie. The two tickets are waiting. Ruby probably will tell me there's a race meeting. Where on, it won't come.
The Sugar Club in Dublin.
The where?
The Sugar Club.
You send me the postcode, yeah?
Ruby, we look after you. Come on, VIP seats, the whole lot.
So if we do go, Al, who will we see?
Well, we have a League of Ireland panel, so we've Stephen O'Donnell, Tim Clancy, Rory Higgins. Stewie's going to sing a couple of songs, Stewie Byrne as well. And then we have Kenny Cunningham and Keith Tracy, and there may be one other, but I don't want to say anything about it yet. No. But I'm looking forward to it, Marie. It's been a long time in the planning, and I think all the tickets are sold out, so it should be a good night.
Do you want me to open the stage and expose my lack of knowledge on the League of Ireland?
The last time I was on a stage with you, Ruby, all hell broke loose.
Right, well, Alan, best of luck. I'll be there. Ruby?
I'll think about it. I might be washing my hair.
Right, we will be back tomorrow and we'll have Kelly Harrington.
Dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide.